The name of Charles Pitts's show. Well, when I take phone calls, which I will do a little bit later and not too long from now, because I don't want this to be a 90-minute more dialogue. We're going to 3 a.m. Then you can call up and tell me. Don't bother now. I'm not taking calls yet. But Post would begin the process of sign-off at 3. Sometimes he got off the air as early as 4:15 or so. Sometimes not until 5. And there was the thrill, the tuning in for this ritual. And running gags that went for years of Post talking about head cheese and guava, Charles, that would be Charles Pitts and Post going back and forth. And all of these wonderful, wonderful little rituals. So it turns into 1967, May 1st, and WBAI is having its second ever fundraising drive. And those marathons, as they were called, rightfully so, began on May 1st and went for about a month. And the year's budget would be made in that 1 month, and you wouldn't hear on the air from us about money for a long time. And they asked for phone volunteers. So you better believe that late one Friday, no, Saturday night, I went to WBAI for the very first time on May 1st, 1967, or whatever the Saturday is, can look that up easily nowadays, but it was the Saturday of May, the first Saturday in May, 1967. I usually celebrate it as May 1st. It might be, it might not be, at any rate. The main reason I went there was I had to find out what Steve Post looked like. BAI was located in a small brownstone on 39th Street, East 39th Street, in the shadow of the roadway that comes off Grand Central. And the bathroom was a small, cramped place. And the news wires, the tickers, the teletype machines, were actually on a board over the bathtubs. Then there was one studio with a small control room looking in. And then there was the master control room, which had a window that was maybe, oh, like, you know, 1 foot square. And not being a tall person, if I went on tiptoe, I could look in there. And I did that to see Steve Post. It was a life-changing moment for me. It was really thrilling. And thus, for me, personal history was made. Before I had been hooked listening to WBAI, now I was hooked being there. And I spent as much time as I could answering phones, which got me upstairs. And I think people were pretty put off by having this 13-year-old kid there, and God knows what my behavior was and being underfoot and stuff like that. So I was given a job, the job of bouncer. Now, I think this was a real job, but it may have been created just to get me the heck off the third floor where the station was located and down into the foyer, where I would have a checklist of the names of people that worked at BAI and a phone. And if somebody would come in before they would get to the elevator or the stairs, I would check them off and let them pass or not. Like, what could I do if somebody came in and were not? This is sometime after the JDL had tried to occupy the station because of a radio program that Julius Lester had done. Great anecdote about that, but hopefully Paul Fisher will tell it sometime. It's really his to tell. And so forth. So Post comes in, and, you know, I get a thrill. He talks to me. Now, he was fairly freaked out, I may say, by the fact that I was this face that looked in at the window and stared at him. I don't think he's very comfortable with the idea of fans. Not on that level. He could stand up at the Village Gaslight. The first BAI event that I attended was at the Gaslight. Dave Bromberg, Van Ronk, and the third person, it wasn't Patrick Sky, but somebody like that, somebody I don't recall right now. And Post was the host for this BAI benefit. At any rate, as I say, to me, this is all very heady and very thrilling. Post says, you know, be aware that the person coming in after me, he's been following me, and he's got problems. He thinks he's the station manager. Our station manager is a guy named Frank Millspawn. This guy is going to tell you that, you know, he's that person. Do not, under any circumstances, let him in. And Post went on upstairs. And then, you know, 2 minutes later, right behind him, fetching coffee that Post probably told him to pick up and bring in, came the station manager, Frank Millspawn, who I, of course, kept out. Well, I called upstairs, you know. Again, 13 years old. What was I going to do to keep him out? What's the point of this story? None, really. Sorry. Just recollecting. I did a lot of recollecting last week about Margot, and as long as Hour of the Wolf is on the air, program that she started, and that's the program that turned WBAI into a 24-hour-a-day station. It was that, as I said, we used to always sign off. And when Margot arranged in 1972 for Hour of the Wolf to begin, the explanation of how it began was broadcast last week in Margot's own voice. Now Steve and Bob had to go till 5 a.m. and Larry Josephson no longer got to turn on the transmitter, which must have been a thrill. He had to transition from Margot and or I on the days when Margot wasn't there. So, eventually, Post stopped doing The Outside, and he began his morning program, Room 101. And at that point, Margot had stopped doing Hour of the Wolf. She was doing Unstuck in Time. And I then had the thrill of being the person who preceded Post and doing the transition. And on some occasions, I would even fill in for him. There was one very snowy day when he just was not able to make it in. And there's a funny anecdote that, in fact, in the very few stories that I've written up for my Will I Ever Write Them memoirs, I tell that story. But I alluded last week to some stories that I cannot tell on the air, not because they are salacious or anything like that, but because they involve personal things in people's lives that have not been revealed on the air, and at this time, I'm not going to do it. But it's a doozy. It's a doozy. And the reason for the shows last week and this week are not just me venting and crying and memorializing these wonderful people, but also because these are both people that moved on from WBAI to, in Steve's case, first WBLS and then to WNYC / later on WQXR for his morning music program and his no-show show, since Steve was so often not on the air, several of which, by the way, I'm told, can be found online at the WNYC website. And, by the way, I'm terribly sad and sorry to say that I do not have any actuality of Steve talking. I will get some. I will have some for the future. And I'm going to acquire more of Margot Adler. But right now, all that I have is the stuff that is kept digitally. And we don't even have, is there even a cassette machine in this room up here at City College? No, there is not. So, magnetic-based media are out. Only digital here. But I will look to doing these things, at any rate. Sidetracked myself again. Oh, yes. They moved on. They moved on to Margot, to NPR, and Steve to WNYC. People mistakenly confuse NYC and NPR. They are not the same thing. One is a program producer that is a part of the federal government and funded by the federal government, and the other was New York City's municipally owned radio station that Rudy Giuliani basically sold it to itself and formed the WNYC, formed New York Public Radio, which now also owns WQXR, and I believe some other stations as well. But I could be wrong about that. And in the New York Times and the New York Post, excuse me, not the Post, the Daily News, both of which did appropriate and lengthy obituaries of both Margot and Steve. They're mostly about NPR. Current magazine, current.org, which is the trade journal of non-commercial radio, had a wonderful remembrance of Steve Post, written by Larry Josephson. And the week before, I'm going to screw up his last name, so I won't say it. It's in my email. Did a wonderful piece about Adler. And the New York Times, they both remembered the roots at WBAI, but they did not necessarily go into any kind of detail about those times. Now, Margot was with BAI, on BAI, on a regular ongoing basis, from 1968 until about 1982 or 83. And even after that, she was occasionally doing programs. So she was as recently as 2 years ago, was on our air. And Post would come in occasionally, especially for the 40th anniversary of WBAI that we had in 2010. Margot was there too, of course. And Post would occasionally be on our air. Both of these people were so different on WBAI than the places that they became better known for. Margot on NPR, the reporter producing pieces for All Things Considered and turning in reports and being the, in essence, New York bureau chief of National Public Radio, was not the same Margot that did Hour of the Wolf or Unstuck in Time. It did these amazing, incredible feats of free-form radio, unlike that of FAS or Post or the rest of the crew. And Post, in doing room, well, in doing the outside, which was just woolly and airy and wonderful. And then when he did Room 101 in the mornings, and he would read selections from the New York Times on the air and poo-poo the weather or not reports. Yeah, he would do touches of that on NYC, but it was not the same. This is the place where they breathed. This is the place where each of them were able to spread their wings and play with the medium of radio. Steve Post wrote a book called Playing in the FM Band, which, by the way, is available for free, and you can get it, among other places, on Facebook, on the WBAI page. Max Schmid posted a link to it. I will share that link as well. So if you want to go to the Hour of the Wolf page on Facebook after I get home tonight, it will be there as well. I was edited out of that book, darn it. There was this wonderful picture of Bob Fass and I. And the picture was cropped just to have Fass and me taken out. Anyway, I'm going to play some music now, and when I come back, I would very much enjoy you calling in and telling stories and asking questions and sharing memories of Steve Post and Margot Adler. And don't bother calling now because our phone line doesn't retain calls, you see. It rings like 10 times and then you're lost into the ether. And only two of the phone lines that I'm aware of work at the same time. If more than two people call, the third one goes into infinity land. So when this music is over, then you can call 209-2900 and we can share memories. And please be on topic. The sign-off. When Post went off the air, he had a particular piece of music that even then, when he played it, gave me palpitations, gave me this feeling of this hollow, happy sadness, because I knew he was going off the air. I knew that the adventure for the night was over. And the song itself was poignant. Never, never so much even then. And even then, 49 years ago, 48 years ago, it was poignant. Now, so much more. Here's Steve Post's sign-off song by Fred Engelberg.
Talking away. Close your eyes, there goes another day. Time makes some women sisters, makes some women mothers. Time makes some men fathers, makes some men brothers. And I sit here and I worry. I sit here and I wonder whether time will make a lonely old man in the park feeding pigeons on a Thursday afternoon out of me. Time keeps tick-tocking away. Close your eyes, there goes another day. Time could defeat a nation, could bring integration. Time could make a mushroom out of all the land and sea. And I sit here and I worry. I sit here and I wonder. another time we'll make a lonely old man in the park feeding pigeons on a Thursday afternoon. Keeps tick-tocking away. Close your eyes, there goes another day. Time could make an egg a bird, make some letters a word. Time can turn an acorn into a green oak tree. And I sit here and I worry. I sit here and I wonder whether time will make a lonely old man in the park feeding pigeons on a Thursday afternoon out of me. Time keeps tick-tocking away. Close your eyes, there goes another day.
Okay, I will take phone calls at 212-209-2900. And while I've already put one person on, you're on hold, and I will come to you in a minute. But I had to say, I accuse, j'accuse. For two things. Number one, if you go to my page on Facebook, Jim Freund, during that music, I did post playing in the FM band. There is now a link to it on my page, or you can go to the open group WBAI radio page and look for the picture of Steve Post, and you will see a comment from Max Schmid which has the link to it. Number two, the j'accuse. The place I got that song from is on YouTube. Somebody posted it there. And did you listen very carefully? Let me see if I can go back there again. Let me bring this up. And just the very end of that song during the frick-a-tick-a-tick-a-ticks at the very end. And listen, do you get one person or two? Well, it's a solo song. I will warn you of that. And it was in keeping with Steve to sing along with Fred Engelberg. Just for that, he would open his mic, and I at home would mouth, it's not coming through, is it? Well, trust me, it's there. I would open my mouth, and I would frick-a-tick, and Post would open his mic and do those frick-a-tick-a-ticks as well. And on that version that I just played, you can hear Steve in the background. You can hear the microphone open at 30 East 39th Street and him mouthing along with Fred Engelberg. So we know that that particular recording came off of an air check of The Outside. And good morning. You're on the radio.
Well, how are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
Well, okay, I guess. I don't know too much about what you're talking about with this Mr. Post or the other people. I've been listening to the BAI since the 1970s, and I'm basically a political person. I'm very distressed at the lack of progressive motion in our country. But I hear on BAI, people, you know, progressives who are just hurting themselves and working against themselves, and it just bothers me.
Being that this show is a memorial and a tribute to two people who recently died, I don't mind
what
you're saying.
I didn't know that.
Yes, it is.
Sorry, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I you know, this is a tribute to Steve Post and Margot Adler, who were both on the air in the 70s. So you said if you were a listener since the 70s, then you would know who those people are. These are the people that helped build WBAI and are very, very, very important people in the progressive radio community.
I didn't know this was a memorial. Well, you're doing a good job. Thank you, Nelson.
Okay. Well, no, yeah, I don't mean to cut you off, you know, and you're not cut off. You're still there. But why don't you say what you're going to say?
Well, it has nothing to do with the memorial, though. I'm just very concerned.
Well, it has to do with the BAI community, and the memorial is part of the BAI community.
You know, I've been a progressive for many, many years, many decades, and over the years, you know, you kind of grow and I'd give an example. Back in the early 60s, I was against racism, you know, and I still am, you know, but I have grown to be more multidimensional. I'm against racism, against blacks and whites and everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we seem to have one-dimensional thinking when it comes to this, like, you know, only white people could be racist, and it's hurting the progressive movement, and then I have another person on BAI who talks about moving out of the city. And, you know, and buying farms. Everybody should just move out of the city and buy farms. When, in fact, if you look at American history, you know, the American progressive movement, the little that we have today was attained by migrant blacks coming up from the South and moving to the urban cities in the North.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what really, you know, strengthened.
Since we're doing a memorial, let me mention that one of the people, Margot Adler, was a reporter for our San Francisco, our Berkeley station, KPFA, and she covered the Freedom March on site 50 years ago.
Uh-huh.
That sounds
good.
Yeah, and I'm very much not a political person. Almost every time I open my mouth about something political, I insert my foot all the way back. So I won't contest or.
That's how you get better, though.
Yeah, well, I'm now 60.
you're a young guy. You're not old. You know, another thing too. This thing about marijuana. I mean, marijuana not only causes lung cancer, but it's criminalizing people who take it. And like I see these progressives, like, you know, jumping up and down because, you know, in some states, you know, we have marijuana is now legal.
Mm-hmm.
And they're out of their minds, and these conservatives are like jumping up and down. They're so glad, you know. The progressives are criminalizing themselves, shortening their lives, and what else?
Well, I don't think there is, in fact, any evidence that marijuana causes lung cancer.
Well, they didn't have the studies, but most likely.
Well, they've tried to have the studies. There is something that I do know a little something about. And no, marijuana does not have the tars and nicotines that I was a tobacco smoker, Lord help me, for way too many years. And I was also a light drug user of marijuana and all that. I've done the reading. I've done the studies. The biggest problem with marijuana is that of short-term memory loss. But can...
What about the fact that it's criminalized and a whole, you know,
alcohol used to be criminalized.
But the way the reality is, alcohol is basically accepted somewhat, okay?
Yeah, and marijuana is now becoming accepted.
No, I don't think they're going to do it all the way. It's not going to be like marijuana. It's not going to be like alcohol. And you're criminal. You're taking part
I'll tell you, money talks, and taxes on marijuana, I think, will make it legal.
Okay, you're kind of getting off the point, but since you know this is a serious.
Well, Well, it is and it isn't. It's serious, but it's a good memorial, good tribute should have laughs in it. But you're right; we are getting off topic.
Right. Well, I enjoy talking to you tonight.
Likewise, thank you so much for being there.
These people will be my memory. Thank you.
Thank you. Take care. Bye bye. 212-209-2900. Good morning. You're on the radio. Hello.
Yeah, hi, Jim. I appreciate the tribute that you made to Margo and Steve, but I'm just very disappointed to not have the chance to hear any of the audio of Steve.
Yeah.
Because I discovered him on WNYC. I never heard him on WBAI, and I've always heard people say how great his work was on BAI, so I've never... You've just whetted my appetite.
Well, you know, keep it wet. We will have it. You know, check in with me, check in with Max Schmid. The problem is that I promise you I've got a good deal of post at home. It's all based on recorded tape, some of it on 10-inch reels. It needs to be converted to digital in order for us to be able to broadcast it.
Okay.
But Max has the capability. I have some tapes. We will be doing this, and these people will not be out of our minds. Let me rephrase that. I may be out of my mind, but they won't. Right. They will be in mine, and we will broadcast them.
Okay,
I'm really sorry it's not this morning.
I'm sure I'm not alone, though, among your listeners. I mean, in hearing the description of his programs, thinking how great, you know, your description is very colorful and very vivid, and obviously there's no substitute for hearing it, but...
There is no substitute. That is great.
Right, but you think maybe within the next 2 or 3 months, possibly on Hour of the Wolf,
yes,
you may have the opportunity...
I make that pledge.
Okay, I appreciate that. And your new hours are from 1 to 3 now?
I do not know.
Oh, okay.
I am officially still 1:30 till 3. Last week I was on from midnight till 3. I did not know whether I would be on starting at midnight or at 1 today. I'm put on from 1 to 3 right now during fundraising. We are about to have yet another new temporary interim program director that may or may not change things. I would very much like to move away from starting at 1:30. 1 o'clock would actually suit me.
Right.
You know, but
yeah, I agree.
But it's not official.
Okay. Well, I hope that you are still on the air in the next 2 to 3 months, so I will have the opportunity to hear... The Outside or Room 101, because I'm very much looking forward to that.
Yeah, the materials I have are more likely to be from The Outside, the older stuff.
Okay,
Max Schmid may be able to acquire examples of Room 101.
Okay, well, that's great. Well, I look forward to it. And like I said, I hope you're still on the air. You and Max are still on the air.
And WBAI.
Yeah, well.
You know, our survival is as always, on the line.
Right, right. Well, I think it's great that you're keeping their memories alive, both Margo and Steve. And just keep up the great work. And I miss them both, but I'm glad that you guys still have their recordings. And hopefully, like you said, you'll make Steve's work available to people like me who've never heard the work that he did on BAI.
So I played a nice chunk of Margo last week, and
right,
it's still available in the archives.
Okay. Well, I'll check it out, and I look forward to down the road, like you said, if BAI is still on the air, and you're still on the air, of listening to the great work that Steve did on BAI.
Yeah.
So thanks very much, Jim.
Thank you so much.
Great night.
You too. Take care.
Take care.
Good morning. We had some calls and they went away. Call back 212-209-2900, as I say. And I did see 3 phones lighting up, so there must be more than just the 2 lines that work. This is, by the way, since it's 201 in New York, let me say that this is WBAI in New York City, listener-sponsored non-commercial radio at 99.5 FM and at WBAI.com. .org. Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
Okay, pretty good. I tuned in late, so I presume that this is a memorial for Steve Post and Margo Adler.
That is correct.
Yes, yes. I remember I came across Steve Post when he was on the other station. I can mention it, right?
Of course you can.
Yeah, okay.
WNYC.
Struck dead by lightning or something.
Yeah, although, you know, I wasn't sure whether in the end he was on WNYC or QXR.
Mm.
It was New York Public Radio in either event.
Right. I probably towards the, if there was a switch, you probably towards the end he was on QXR.
That would be my guess.
Yeah, I can't remember. And I remember him being that very peculiar, fascinating personality. He played classical music, and between numbers, to vulgarize it, you know, say between numbers, so he played classical music, but he was, I have a very distinct memory of him talking about the glass organ and how he admired people that could tolerate it or something like that. He just thought that for people don't know the glass organ, there are these glasses that are filled with different levels, and you take a moistened finger and you run it around the rim.
I think you mean the glass harmonica.
Oh, yes, there you go. Glass organ. Oh, God.
Glass organ is probably something we're not allowed to discuss on the radio.
Not even in this time. Not even in so-called...
Not even in safe harbors.
There's no harbor that's safe for that one.
No, I think not. I think not.
Yeah. So anyway, glass harmonica, right. There you go. Thank you for setting me straight there. He just was so funny in such an understated way, you know, and he talked about how that the sound of it got to a place of a pain center in his nervous system inside his brain that was something he just couldn't deal with. And it was just so fascinating, his personality. Quickly, would you allow me a quick little rebut? I won't be heavy or intense about it. A caller said a couple of calls back. I'll be very brief with it, if you allow me.
Mm-hmm.
If you indulge me.
Yeah.
Regarding the marijuana and the criminalization thing, I think it's sort of ironic that you're talking about criminalization. The criminalization ensues from the attempt to keep it illegal, and therefore creating a black market where then prisons can be used to, put people away that not all of whom get treated the same, and also related to that, the notion of that racism shouldn't be seen as something that just white people have. The problem with seeing it that way is that history isn't symmetrical, and that the people who have had the levers of power have. Fortunate or unfortunate. Sometimes I think, wouldn't it be in a bizarre way fortunate if we all shared racism equally? We might be able to solve this. But there's a disparity. There's a little thing called a gross historical disparity, like the Middle Passage, which, as far as I know, didn't travel in the other direction. So it just doesn't serve the argument the way he frames it to see the way. He seems to live in an inverted universe. I'm getting off my toadstool now. And turning the show back to you.
Okay, well, thank you.
Have a good night.
You too. Take care. Bye. Thanks for calling. Okay, the telephone number, if you have thoughts, questions, answers about Steve Post, Margot Adler, and the history of WBAI, I've been a volunteer here since 1967, is 212-209-2900. And I'm mentioning, and not sarcastically or sardonically, about the continued existence of this station. That was a question when I first came to answer phones in 1967, and it continues to be that, and we are on a greater precipice now than then. And people are encouraged to call. This is a fundraising period at WBAI, and the telephone number to call and pledge is 212-209-2950. To call on the air, it's 2900 and 2950. If you would like to place a pledge, $25 will make you a subscriber. I find it ironic that when I started at WBAI answering phones for pledges, to become a subscriber was $45. And the price has actually, in the last 50 years, come down. I encourage you to give more, or in another manner, to give less. Become a WBAI buddy. That's a mere $10. Oh, there's a catch. That's $10 a month as opposed to $25 a year. But $10 a month means that there will be money to make sure that you become a sustaining member and that we are able to get that money on an ongoing basis, that perhaps we will know where our next radio meal is coming from. So please do call that phone number and pledge at 212-209-2950. And for the moment, phone calls have abated at 212-209-2900. And let's see, I got myself so far off track. I mean, I have so many stories about these folk, about Margo and about Steve. And yet, in a way, I'm just sort of going blank, ironically, about, you know, which I should tell. And the few that I have offhand are often ones that I cannot easily talk about. The ones with Margo and how it seemed as if we were destined to become the best of friends were, I talked about how we both performed at the same day at the New York World's Fair in the New York State Pavilion at this concert, and another WBAI/NPR person wrote me and told me that her father somehow either attending or involved in that event. And then Margo and I were at camp, at the same camp, but not together. We didn't know each other. It wasn't until 1968 that we met and became fairly inseparable, like a brother and sister through the years. And my relationships with Steve, as I say, were almost the opposite. I have a tendency to hero worship. Now, Margo is probably my greatest role model. But we always had an easygoing, nonverbal, and sometimes very verbal relationship. Hopefully verbal while we were on the air. Nonverbal relationships don't work well on radio, I've discovered, not in terms of how we're broadcasting. Okay, yes, that brought a Steve Post story to mind, which I'll relate in a minute if we don't get more calls. But I'll get to that right now. At one point, Post did a program called... No, I can't tell this story. Ooh, I can't. There are living people for whom this story would be sensitive. So, nope. Self-censorship is the worst thing. Even though this was something that was broadcast. But no, I'm going to move away from that. I'm sorry. That's useless radio, isn't it? Just teasing without any verbal fulfillment at the end there. Yeah, I really wish I had some actuality. Continuity is when you say, next we're going to hear blah, blah, blah. And then the actuality. These are old radio terms, people. And the actuality is the sound. When you hear a news report, all of the reportage tends to be continuity. And then when you cut to the tape of the demonstration or whatever it is you're doing, that's the actuality. And I'm very upset that I don't have recordings of Steve Post to play on the air this morning. But I am pledging to do so. Sorry, Lynn, I'm getting off mic here because I'm typing away at the computer just in case I'm able to get some stuff. No, that's got to be something else altogether. Yes, apparently there was a NASCAR reply. I was YouTubing. People can Google Steve Post, and you should. But no, there I was YouTubing the name Steve Post, and this turns out to be a for the most part somebody who's a NASCAR reporter. And also worked in radio, but not, definitely not the same person. So, nothing I can say about that there. Nothing I can play. I was hoping to possibly find something there. There is... You can hear some of Post's material, as I said, from the WNYC.org website. But this is that's the no-show. But as I say, in the case of both Margot, probably outside of her book Drawing Down the Moon, probably best known as an NPR producer and reporter, and Steve Post probably best known as a classical music jock, to be vulgar, as the last caller put it. They were of us. They were of WBAI. They got their wings here. They got their radio legs and their radio wings here, because it's only here... It's only here due to the free-form nature of what it is that we have and what it is that we do that people are really able to experiment in the form of radio. This is something you don't get on podcasts. This is something radio, I hope, is always with us. If podcasts take over, they will not be the same thing until they're able to take listener calls and free associate and get people, multiple people, together at once talking. And that's something we can do here by saying, good morning, WBAI, you're on the air. And you should turn down your radio because we're on delay. Hello? Oh, did that person actually hang up? You know, here I was waiting for a call. So call back, 212-209-2900, and yes, do bear in mind that we are on delay. I think it's about a five-second delay. And so if you listen to your... So in order to know when I answer the phone, listen to your phone, not the radio, because there will be a full at least 5 seconds beforehand. And then when you do connect... Turn down your radio because it's awfully confusing. A game that I remember Post trying to play on the air was listening to air on delay while talking live. It's almost impossible to do, to keep a train of thought. Hearing yourself 5 seconds in the past. Good morning, you're on the air.
Doing good morning.
How are you?
Okay. I don't think I ever really heard Margot Adler on WBAI. I was wondering, when she was on WBAI, did she have a program that dealt with paganism?
Yes. Not just that per se. Hour of the Wolf, this program that I took over from Margot in 1974, this program she was where? Right on the air. Hold on 1 second. I've got to open the door. Pardon me, but it was on Hour of the Wolf that, and during the earliest days of Hour of the Wolf, when she was still the host, that she discovered paganism. And that discovery and how it came about and all that stuff occurred on this very program. Now, that was in those days, it was 5 to 7 a.m. But she did not do a show specifically about paganism. She did episodes of Unstuck in Time, and I'm trying to remember the name of her Midnight program. A lot of them certainly involved paganism, and as she learned about it, and then as she began teaching it, and while she was writing the book, Drawing Down the Moon. We also had another program on WBAI by which Marianne Weinstein, who did a show called Marianne's Cauldron. And that show was exclusively about neo-paganism.
I can imagine with the name Cauldron.
Yeah. And Marianne was, she was wonderful. She passed away quite a few years ago. And she had this wonderful voice that stopped people sometimes from, taking her very seriously. It was always, hello, this is Marianne Weinstein and Marianne's Cauldron. But she was, she was very good and very serious. She and Margot once had a party. We used to be located in a deconsecrated church on 62nd Street between 1st and 2nd Avenue. And you could open the doors of the church, and we had this huge cauldron that we rented out for a day and filled it with dry ice where Marianne and Margot would stir it and talk on the air live doing all that.
That's very mysterious. Yeah. Things like that. I guess maybe the stuff with Gerald Gardner, that type of thing that she would really get into a bit.
Yeah, well, Margot was specifically Gardnerian witch.
Gardnerian.
Yeah. She
one book, The Meaning of Witchcraft, I have by him, and is The Golden Bow by Sir James Frazier, The White Goddess by Robert Graves.
Yes.
And
you're naming all of Margot's favorite books.
Yeah, it's like the big one. Yeah, and those books would be available at the Strand like all the time, you know.
Yeah, and they probably still are, and they're probably all available online, including Drawing Down the Moon. Drawing Down the Moon has never been out of print since Margot wrote it.
That's very good. I mean, so again, and I'd rather have that in paper instead of ebook. I'm not buying no ebook.
Yeah,
discs. I don't buy discs.
Yeah, the e-books only recently came out. They have the advantage of portability.
Yes.
But outside of that, they have the disadvantage of their... In a way, I don't know that people have actually done... You know the way that they used to do tests on reading comprehension for speed readers? Did they take in stuff as well as slow readers? And I do read using my phone and tablet at home a great deal for one simple reason. I can read in bed and not disturb my partner. And she does the same. It's backlit and we can do it. But funny thing, just as I say that, I get my phone beeped at me. with the text from somebody. But anyway, there is still a wonder to the book. I'll quote or paraphrase something that before the days of e-books, Isaac Asimov wrote. And he said, imagine now or in the future a cassette, something that contains the printed word, and you can immediately go back and read a previous paragraph, read a previous part, and renew it without so much as doing anything but slightly moving your eyes. And once every couple of minutes, all you have to do is one small motion to get to the next part. That's called a book. And, there's something about that that is absolutely correct. When you read an e-book, whether it's on a Kindle-like device or a phone or a tablet or whatever it may be, you don't have that capability to, without even thinking about it, go back a step. And you're always dealing with technology.
Yeah, well, I think like a book like Drawing Down the Moon probably has an index. So if you want to look up a certain topic in that index, then you want to go back to the page. Like, okay, here's a topic I want to look at. Let's say it's about the heretics, and it's on page 329. Mm-hmm. Now I got to find that on my Kindle, 329. You know what?
Actually, on your Kindle, all you have to do is do a search.
Search.
And it's even more effective than an index. Every word is automatically indexed and available through a search on an ebook.
What about pictures, though? I mean,
they're there. They are there. All the pictures are there.
Color?
Yes. Yes. You pay more for a color Kindle, and certainly on any tablet, you not only have color, but some ebooks are multimedia. They may have music that go with them. So that, you know, if you were to get to one of Marco's little hymns, little pagan songs, you could hear her singing it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't do that on an ordinary book. But I would also maintain that you don't get quite the same comprehension on an ordinary book, or for that matter, on an audio book. Each one of them has their own strength.
Yeah.
So I'm going to argue both ways on this one. I agree with you, and yet. Mm-hmm. And yet I have dissension at the same time.
If you're going to have let's say like an oversized book, like J.R.R. Tolkien's The Father Christmas Letters.
Yeah.
You want that as a book. You don't want that as ebook.
I absolutely agree. Also, I'm a collector.
Yeah.
I mean, I have pulp magazines. What is the point of having a pulp magazine in ebook format? And I do.
Yeah.
I have them in ebook format. It's not the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I love taking a look at a shelf and seeing those binders in a row and saying, look, I've got that entire series.
Mm-hmm.
I have got a first edition, but later, in like 11th impression of The Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm.
So 11th, first edition means it's the original plates. 11th impression is it's the 11th time they went to the printer to do that. But that book has, you open it up and the first thing you have is a fold-out map on onion skin. On onion skin.
Onion skin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's different. That's wonderful. On the other hand, when I was rereading American Gods by Neil Gaiman, there are so many referential things, all these different gods that Gaiman writes about in there. I was actually able to multitask, to go away from the book, look up the name of the god that he was referring to, and look that god up in, you know, from whatever culture it came from, and read about it and learn more about it. And that's something you cannot do with a book.
I know that in the Game of Thrones series, there's always like the appendices to explain things, and so I just go to the back, you know.
Yeah, but it's still not, but this is different. This is not George Martin. You know, George writes his own appendices, and Neil had his own blog when he was writing American Gods. But it's not the same as being able to go to, say, Wikipedia and see what the history of that god may be.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So you're getting third-party information.
Mm-hmm.
And possibly music to go along with it.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I agree with you about the beauty and the wonder of a book. And I do think that people read on paper differently than on an ebook. But I'll also tell you, the very first time I saw Kindle, which was the first form of ebook outside of like the Palm PDA, I walked into a computer store, it was J&R to be specific, and I saw this thing on display, and I figured that they had a piece of paper over the front that had a, you know, book on it, and, you know, rather than have it live, as it were, and working the way you could pick up some computers or phones and type on them and see how they work, I figured they just put a piece of paper on the front. And I touched the thing, and the text changed to the next page. It was, my God, it was almost indistinguishable from paper. And that's why they call the technology that they use digital ink.
Okay.
But having said that, you know, Drawing Down the Moon probably is a book that people could read on ebook, although I think it only came out on ebook somewhere in the last... You know, that one came out like 3 years ago. Heretic's Heart by Margot Adler is only available as an ebook.
Mm-hmm.
And her shorter work about vampire fiction, Out for Blood, was originally published only in ebook format. But her latest and therefore last book, called Vampires Are Us, was published by Samuel Weiser.
Okay. Notice that with some authors, they're kind of like they never really heard of before, and like maybe I found them in Writer's Digest, like in the past,
mm-hmm.
and they got published. And I wondered, okay, like some time went by. I wondered whatever happened to these people who maybe won a contest or something. And I would look them up on Amazon, and I would find that they are published only on ebook or on Kindle, not in paper. They're not published at all.
Yeah.
Paper. So it's like, to me, they're not famous. They're semi-famous in my brain.
Yeah. Well, it's the good and the evil of this is the democratization of publishing.
Yeah.
You know, the bad side is when you don't have when it's totally self-published and you just pay somebody to turn your thing into an ebook, and you don't really have a professional editor.
Mm-hmm.
And that says to me, nobody has taken the work by this person and said, I deem this good enough to put money into it and market it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it becomes a vanity affair at that time. And yet, at the same time, what this means is that somebody who previously might not have had access to one of the big six publishers or even an independent press, because maybe they only write short stories.
Mm-hmm.
And a person who writes only short stories, exclusively short stories, very seldom do they get published. You need novels to get a contract with a publisher.
Like the one exception is Harlan Ellison. He's a lot, mostly stories.
Yeah, but he wrote a number of really terrible, awful novels in order to get a lot of his stuff into print initially. Mm-hmm. And he's been republishing them of late.
Mm.
And, you know, another exception is Karen Russell, but Karen recently came out with a novel. Ted Chiang has somehow managed not to only put out one short story collection and no novels. And Ken Liu in order to get a book of his fabulous short stories out, he has made a deal for a novel first.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
But the wonderful thing, the other side, is the wonderful thing about ebooks is that there are publishing companies that are doing nothing but taking the back list of authors who have been out of print for years and years,
mm-hmm.
and are bringing them into print for the first time ever. No, I'm sorry, not for the first time ever. My mind is wandering. Are bringing them back into print and would otherwise be totally unavailable. And Robert Sheckley is a good example. You will not find too many paperback or hardcover editions of Robert Sheckley or Frederick Brown or a lot of these wonderful, wonderful writers of the past. But you can get ebooks. And there are publishers dedicated, like Open Road Media, to buying entire collections of writers. They buy the entire output of a specific writer, like Octavia Butler or something, and they put it all into print at once.
I guess a guy like John Brunner, too. Yeah.
You know, yeah, I would have to find out. Margot Adler and I produced a radio show with John Brunner. Mm-hmm. And damn it, I don't have a copy of it. It was called At the Foot of the Apocalypse. And it was Brunner reading his own poetry. Mm. I will have to contact Margot's son and see if he's got a copy of that. And maybe we can digitize that. It's a very, very difficult process to digitize old magnetic media. That's a one-hour program. Probably cost upwards of $200 to get that 1 hour digitized. It's a restoration process, just like restoring old movies.
Say like a lot of the Frank Herbert stuff that's not Dune.
Yeah,
a lot of stuff out there. Maybe it'll be available as ebook.
Yeah, very possibly. Although outside of the Santanagaroga barrier, I gotta say, if it's Frank Herbert, not Dune, save yourself the trouble. Sorry.
I know it's like the Heaven Makers.
Yeah, that wasn't that bad.
Hellstrom's Hive.
No, that one was that bad.
Oh my God.
But they deserve to be read. They deserve to be read, whatever my opinion may be.
Oh, sure. Yeah, like, oh, because I don't see them in any stores. I mean, you have or the science fiction section. I just don't see it.
I mean, books go out of print. That's it. Yeah. You know, that's it. And then their lifespan is done. It's a shame.
Yeah, it's like, I know. People who have recently died, and it was weird that James P. Hogan died. You know, I guess he was sick, and you know he wrote all the nuts and bolts type of sci-fi. Not James P. Hogan.
Mm-hmm. He was a good writer. I liked him.
And a lot of his stuff was published by Tor. Maybe some of it's still in print. I guess a lot of his Del Rey stuff went out of print.
Yeah, but mind you, Tor is part of Macmillan. It's one of the big six publishers.
Okay.
And it's very likely that his stuff will come back as, and it will be reincarnated as an ebook.
Oh, yeah.
But as a print book, unlikely. The economics are simply not there. Mm-hmm. Science fiction doesn't sell that well to begin with. Not like mysteries. And not like horror.
Yeah.
Or westerns, or above all, the number one selling genre is romance.
But none of those writers in romance are like someone that you could say by the name that it's a type of author that writes a certain type of topic.
Oh, yeah, sure there are. Sure there are. I mean, the people that write the Harlequin books, these are some of the top-selling writers in the world.
I'll follow it, so I don't know one name. Oh, yeah, I'm thoroughly ignorant on it.
Well, because it's not a genre that you or I read.
Yeah.
But I got to tell you something. I've been to science fiction conventions, and one time to do an interview with a woman who wrote romance under one pseudonym and science fiction under another, I was at a romance writers event, and my God, you want to talk about rabid fans? They make Comic-Con look sedate.
Wow.
And Comic-Con has little to do with books and even less to do with comics, just about movies.
But a writer like Michael Moorcock stands out from any romance writer, no matter how famous that and how much money she's making.
Michael
Moorcock has ideas. A romance writer has one idea. Boy meets girl, they fall in love, they break up, they come back again. That's the novel. Thousands and thousands and thousands of novels.
No. It's more complicated than that. At some point, I will bring Alyssa Quitney on the air. Mm-hmm. Now, Alyssa Quitney writes best-selling romance. She's a big, big name. Now, when she works under her maiden name, or actually both are her maiden names, her mother, Ziva Quitney, a well-known psychiatrist. Her father's Robert Sheckley. Well-known
Robert
science.
Sheckley, right?
Yes. And she has written books under both the name Alyssa Quitney and Alyssa Sheckley. Now, she's written romance book in which paranormal romance, and that's a big subgenre, in which our lead character, well, she has these things that happen to her once a month on the full moon. Mm-hmm. She turns into a werewolf. And she turns out pheromones that bring men in the droves to her. Now, she, yes, love may be on the mind, but so is a good meal. Mm-hmm. Now, that is not, you know, so you can have ingenuity and fun even in romance genre.
Okay, I see that, yeah.
Yeah. But it's not a genre that you and I necessarily appreciate, so we're unfamiliar with it.
Yeah, yeah. I'd say. Okay,
listen, let me move along.
Yes, okay, very good. Good discussion.
Thanks for calling. Take care.
Sure, bye.
Bye-bye. And good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning, James.
Good morning, Robert.
I was thinking of moon references when you mentioned Margot's wonderful book. I just got back from Britain,
mm-hmm.
and we had interesting discussions on lunar lore.
Okay.
And I thought about a toast that I heard, which actually apparently has been written by Maine singer-composer Gordon Bach.
I remember Gordon Bach.
Yes. And it's a toast to the moon, and I'm paraphrasing. And it begins, ah, which is like Irish for oy vey. And it says, we toast the moon because, like lamps, it brings us light in the dark. Whereas the sun comes out in the daytime when there's already daylight, as we all know. Which then reminds me that there's a Wise Men of Helm story where the sages had to decide for a week which was more important, the sun or the moon, and you can figure out the end of that one. The moon is more important, obviously, because mm-hmm. it comes out at night. And it's interesting, in an era when so many books do go out of print for one reason or another, how many years now has Drawing Down the Moon been around? Years and years and years?
Well, it was published in 78, and it's never been out of print.
36 years.
And there have been multiple editions of it.
That's wonderful. You know, some books go through many, many editions. Nathan Ossible's Great Treasury of Jewish Folklore was published in 48, and I think it's now in its 38th printing, which tells you something about the book or the endurance of it.
And Jews, but...
Well, it is a wonderful book. I mean, it's one of the 10 classics that I would say. You know how they say, well, what 10 books that you want to take on the island? That's one of them.
Yeah.
I did not know how... When did Margot leave us?
Margot died about 10 days ago.
I hope it was very painless, and I hope it was very quick.
There were complexities.
Oh, I'm very sorry. Very sorry. One last thing. The moon. I always loved the title "Drawing Down the Moon." It always sounded like a science fiction title. And then I was reminded: was there not a short story, something about the man who sold the moon, or
Heinlein, yes.
Heinlein, yes. And I think then the aliens came and actually got it. Anyway, to Margot, wherever you are.
In the Summerland, pagans would say, yes.
Yeah. No, she's in Tirnanog.
There you go.
High Brazil.
Wherever. Or in a sacred space.
Sacred space. Avalon.
Yeah.
May you always possess the bard's gift, the gift of song and story, and a heart full of love, wisdom, and understanding. Traditional Welsh proverb. Bye.
Bye-bye. And speaking of sacred space and Margot Adler, here's a chant.
We We are going to a sacred place. We are in sacred space. We are living in a state of grace. We are loving in a sacred way.
Margot Adler from Hour of the Wolf about 3 years ago. And this is WBAI in New York City, listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio at 99.5 FM. We have about 15 minutes left, and if you would like to call up and remember Steve Post or Margot Adler or ask questions or give answers, please do so at 212-209-2900. If you would like to assure the continuance of the radio station that have brought you these voices through the years, make that a 50 on the end, 212-209-2950, and pledge to WBAI. Good morning. You're on the radio. Hello.
Hey, Jim. Dave Marks again.
Hey, Dave. We got to stop meeting like this.
Yeah, let's hope this, we don't have any more of these for a while.
Yeah, really.
So, anyway, I loved the earlier tales about your introduction to the station, which came about, I was not quite as precocious as you were. I mean, a year younger, and I came to the station at 17.
Yeah, but I didn't start actually doing stuff of particular value until I was 17. Up until then, I was answering phones and licking envelopes and doing the door for the Free Music Store. I wasn't producing radio until I was, you know, much older, person of like 16 or 17 myself. So you came in and started engineering and being a producer, and I grew into that.
I spend my time in the subscriptions department stuffing envelopes.
Yeah.
But Watergate was an interesting thread that sort of, for me, ties both Margot and Steve together.
How so?
Well, the first recollection I have working with Margot was on an October Sunday in 73. She was doing the weekend newscast at that point, and I was, you know, more or less living at the station like so many of us. And we discovered that the Watergate prosecutor had just been fired, which is to say that was the Saturday Night Massacre. And we just started, the two of us went to work on that for a little while until I think the larger guns showed up and I was no longer required.
Oh, dear.
But, yeah, such is life at by then 18. That's all cool. But then it was over to Steve, of course, with his legendary Nixon obsession.
Yes. Yes, and one thing I should tell people, be sure to listen to Simon Lokely this week, because I know that he's got a copy of Post's favorite Nixonian bit, Give Him the Shaft. We don't have Nixon to kick around anymore. Which was one of Steve's favorite things to play on the air. And by the way, isn't it ironic?
I think I can sing a few bars of that, but I won't.
Yeah, right. Isn't it ironic to note that Steve, who passed away on Monday, this is the same week as the Watergate hearings began 50 years ago, exactly 50 years ago. Nixon's resignation was what, August 8th, 1974, is that correct?
Something like that. I remember what I was doing. I was cutting news feeds in Edit B while everybody else was in Studio A watching TV.
Yeah, so I'm wrong about the Watergate hearings, but Nixon's resignation was, that's today, the 7th.
Yeah.
And at least in New York, other parts where people are listening, it's probably already the 8th, so they can celebrate the anniversary in their way.
Yeah, and come the summer of 75, Steve thought it was useful to do a wrap-up of Watergate.
Mm-hmm.
turned that into a four-hour documentary called At This Point in Time, The Last Nixon Show.
I had forgotten that. That was wonderful.
Of course, David Frost trumped him on that, but then Steve Pets meet Nixon, so it all ties together. But yeah.
Yeah, but David Frost never wanted to marry Trisha.
I was engineer on that show. It was 4 hours. It was Steve and Richard Barr producing. And I guess they were up with it. Turned into an over 4 hour program.
Yeah.
And we had the, you know, like the whole day in at a B block to mix and assemble the show. You know, there were stacks and stacks of A reels and B reels, Segway serenades and all the rest. And Bartha was still typing out continuity in the studio way on an old manual Remington or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And Steve and I were trying to record continuity. And that had been One Take had been up, you know, 3 days in a row by that time, so it was not easy to get one take at that point. And we managed to get 4 hours of programming assembled.
Today's podcasters are listening going, what do you mean one take? Why can't you just punch and roll? I hate punch and roll.
Tape, razor blades.
Yeah, but no, I've finally started actually doing digital editing for Lightspeed magazine. But I'm working with actors who do multiple takes. And I get to edit them and determine the timing and all stuff. Like, I love it.
Yeah. I haven't done all that in a while, but I was a QXR for 12 years, and I did digital audio editing back in the early 90s.
Right.
Mid-90s. That was cool.
Yeah.
But besides that, so, I mean, Nixon Show, 4 and a half, you know, turned out to be, you know, to put more than an hour's worth of tape on a 10.5-inch reel. So we managed to do that.
Not if it was 1.5 mil.
Yeah.
No. You used 1 mil, you could get more than an hour on a 10-inch reel.
I would not cut 1 mil. Mil.
Nobody really could. You have to get a new razor blade every edit.
You couldn't even cut the tapes well if blades were as dull as they usually were at VAI.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
But see, the first 2 hours of the show were finished in time for me to bring in the news feeds for the big newscast.
Mm-hmm.
Then we resumed work on the remaining 2 hours plus after that. The first 2 hours were produced in about 4 hours, five hours, something like that. The third hour was produced in about 2 hours, and the last hour was produced in real time.
Wow.
And all dashed in. My big contribution, I think it was Larry the J's suggestion. I think it was GM at that point. That's a little foggy.
At that point, he might well have been. I would think yes.
The idea was to separate each hour for a bathroom break for our listeners with about 3 minutes of a simulation of the 18.5-minute gap.
Mm-hmm.
After Rosemary Woods was finished with it.
Yeah, that works.
It kind of worked. It was a very interesting project. I mean, the idea of bringing in actors and trying to guess what was said in those minutes was a little beyond us.
Yeah, and there were the wasn't there a dramatic reading of the Nixon tapes?
There probably was, and there's even more of that stuff out now.
Oh, yeah, but close to that time. Do you have any actuality of Steve?
I wish I did. And that show won that year's Broadcast Media Award from San Francisco State or whoever gave that award. So that was a pretty cool thing for something.
That was thrown together like that, yeah.
Well, yeah, sort of thrown together.
Well, but you know, sort of thrown together is, I mean, that's one of the kinds of things that we were able to do in them days. And, you know, given the lack of facilities that we have now, not so readily available. If we survive and go to our summer land or whatever at 388 Atlantic Avenue, we may be able to do it again.
You never know. The station has been written off more than a few times.
Yeah, yeah, one never knows. There are people that are very optimistic. And this last fortnight, I'm afraid my head has been, buried in a place that should not be discussed even in safe harbor.
Maybe I should wrap up my portion of the evening with how I came to BAI in the first place.
Yes, please do.
Which was all Steve's fault.
Good.
Completely and totally. Yeah, another, in high school, I had come to know the third assistant program director at WABC AM, who then got the exciting job of converting the WPLJ format from freeform Larry Yurton to album-oriented rock.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was listening loyally to to the format and learning everything about formatting commercial radio in high school. And so I was listening to Alex Bennett, and those were the days when Alex and Steve were feuding.
Oh, that's right.
And so I was listening to Bennett initially and said, oh, maybe I'll go over here what Post has to say about Bennett. And I never tuned back.
Right.
Last time I heard Alex Bennett's voice.
Yeah.
You know, that was it. I mean, completely captured by the outside.
Yeah, and that would do it, by all means.
Well, do you have a you don't have My Blue Heaven queued up there.
No, I don't. I thought I would go out in just a couple of minutes with a reprise of Post's sign-off.
Sounds good enough to me.
All righty. Well, thanks again for calling, Dave.
Okay, Jim.
Okay, take care. Okay, good morning. Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye.
And I think we'll try to squeeze in one... No, we won't squeeze in one last call because that call stopped coming in. So, yeah, as I say, we've got to stop meeting like this. We've got to stop, you know... Steve was only 70. Margo was only 68. The same. I mentioned that I went to a movie for catharsis on Monday after I had learned Steve died on Sunday, and on Monday, but I only learned on Monday, and I had to go, you know, just shaking the blues away and get my head out of my butt and be able to at least talk about this and deal with it. And went to see, and I totally recommend, Guardians of the Galaxy. And went to the theater, and guy looks at me and says, "Are you a senior citizen?" Now, I'm thinking back to the times when I met Margo when I was 14 and Post when I was 13 and all that. And I'm thinking, me, senior citizen? No. I say, just how old is a senior citizen? And I can now call him kid at the booth at the movie theater said 60. And I thought, yes, I am indeed a senior citizen now. I am now 60 years old. And that was my first time as a senior citizen. And the day after I had learned of Steve's death, and the week after we lost Margo. And it's, but on the, but people are saying that 60 is the new 45, and that's probably very true. And I hope not only for myself, but for the rest of us that that is true. And having said that, when it comes to Steve Post and Margo Adler, I will say we was robbed. we was robbed. They were taken away too early. Any time would be too early. Mortality sucks. Okay? Oh, darn. Ugh, I just closed my outro by accident. I just closed the song, the browser. That had, no, it would take me like, it would take me 4 minutes or so. Just typing away. I wouldn't even be able to talk on the air during that time because I would have to log on to Google, then go to, I don't have to. Wait. I do know of a quicker way of doing it. And thank you, Lister. And that reminds me, do stay tuned for Burn Baby Burn Clappers coming your way. Even though, did you know you're not on the air this morning? You're not on the air this morning. Yeah, well, nobody bothered telling you about that. That's okay. Max has prepared for such an eventuality, so we will work that out. Okay. So, fortunately, since I have this... look at that. It's actually in the browser. It remembered. Okay. So, as I said, whenever Steve Post would sign off the air, let me say, by the way, this has been Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. Thank you for listening. I will be back next week, goddess willing, with a guest, Sam J. Miller. And there will be future memorial programs. These people will not be out of my mind ever. And Hour of the Wolf is a show that Margot created, and it was a show that preceded Steve Post on the air for years, and they may have become famous through WNYC and through NPR, but they were ours. They were here first, and we gave them their radio DNA. And so mote it be. Blessed be all. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned. And remember, when I play this outro, if you listen at the end very, very carefully, you will hear Steve singing along with Fred Engelberg. Have a good morning.
Tick-tocking away. Close your eyes, there goes another day. Time makes some women sisters, makes some women mothers. Time makes some men fathers, makes some men brothers. And I sit here and I worry. I sit here and I wonder whether time will make a lonely old man in the park feeding pigeons on a Thursday afternoon out of me. Time keeps tick-tocking away. Close your eyes, there goes another day. Time could defeat a nation, could bring integration. Time could make a mushroom out of all the land and sea. And I sit here and I worry. I sit here and I wonder whether time will make a lonely old man in the park feeding pigeons on a Thursday afternoon. Time keeps tick-tocking away. Close your eyes, there goes another day. Time could make an egg a bird, make some letters a word. Time can turn an acorn into a green oak tree. And I
sit here and I worry. I sit here and I wonder whether time will make a lonely old man in the park feeding pigeons on a Thursday afternoon out of me. Tick-tocking away. Close your eyes, there goes another day.
When I leave, you can remember I said with the last words on my lips that I am. And you're gonna have to keep on saying that. You're gonna have to say that I am a proletarian.
Trying to reach my freedom of speech and expressing myself, torching the symbol of oppression. Let that be a lesson to those that want suppression of the truth. Put on hold, the bold lose control, so they force obedience. Have you pledge allegiance to a piece of cloth that's off the way I see it? Well, I'm going off berserk, cause the system works to jerk. My people, the people, all around the pigs lurk. Tell me I'm wrong, though that's my right, and it's right in the Constitution. Yo, that's an illusion, huh? Suckers trying to change and rearrange. They say that I'm free, but they sure have a strange way of showing it. But I'm blowing the cover. The red, white, the blue, but the black for the brother. And I'm no lover of this flag like many others take the same turn. Like me, they yearn for the flag too. A nightmare. I want the people to wake up to the lies, the pigs, make up imperialistic swans that I grind into bacon bits. Call it bits, cause I ain't taking shit. I'm not a Nazi or a Cappy or a Kwame, but you want me in prison, cause I'm messy attack. The flag, I rag it and snag it and drag it and rip it to shreds. Cause I'm too black, too strong, too red, too dread. And I'm dreaded, cause I make the pigs tremble when I burn a symbol. Yo, I'm quick and nimble like Jack, but I'm a black man attacking the flag. I keep my torch handy, I'm no Yankee Doodle Dandy, so just hand me a flag from the fastest. And watch me burn that piece up to ashes. Cause the real meaning is what the masses must learn. That's why the red, white, and blue must burn, baby, burn. Let's find the people who hate this. These are the places we'll hit.
Panama, talking about Peru, Azania, Brixton, Belfast, can't forget Korea, Beirut, can't forget Haiti, Iran, Puerto Rico, Colombia, Mexico. Talk about Uptown, Harlem, New York City, y'all. And Nicaragua, East and South Central LA, California, IA, Miami. Do or die, Bed-Stuy, never ran, never will, Brownsville. Boogie down, South Bronx, yeah.
Yep. because he burned the flag.
Not born.
That's the name of the game. Well, I quit playing. I doubt the suckers want you to hear what I'm saying about this nation. Freedom supposed to be the format, but I step on your flag like it's a floor mat. Maim and mangle, the star spangled. I'm not trying to diss you. I use the flag like toilet tissue to wipe my black ass. What? You think that I'm a jackass? I see a flag and I attack fast with some fire. My desire to burn what Betty Ross sold up. The truth I show up about America, America, home of the brave, land of the free. Boom! This is the home of the slave. Now hold on, just a mother in it. You gave me freedom of speech in the First Amendment. So why wanna scold me when I torch the flag? I'm only doing what you told me. You don't like it, so what? I'm not scared of you. Your flag, America too. See, I made up this new rule and I want y'all to learn it. Strike a match to the American flag and burn.
Prosperity, let's go! Independence, Jamaica!
although from two different parties, it was very good to see how these two politicians were shaking hands when they gained victory. Now independence is good for the young and the old, also for me and you. Yes, independence is great for the whole population, including Yorkshire and too. So I believe that if we try our best, it will be a great success. So let us live in unity for progress and prosperity. Swing it, daddy.